This week in Retronauts, we put the wiki in Wikipedia. Hi everyone, welcome to Retronauts episode 469. It's a 20-minute episode, so we can have 420-69, and it'll be the best Retronauts episode yet. Actually, no, I'm lying. That's not really our brand of humor. We're much more sophisticated.
Well, speak for yourself.
Okay. I mean, yes. I don't know. I'm still half asleep. I didn't get enough sleep last night. We're recording early in the day for me, so that we can record late in the evening for one of our guests, and perfectly pleasant midday, like prime time for another. So please introduce yourselves. Did I mention that I'm Jeremy Parrish? Probably, but I'm too tired to remember. Who else do we have here? Starting, who's furthest in the future?
I guess that's me. This is Diamond Fight in Japan, and in honor of today's subject, I am podcasting entirely with my left hand.
Nice. And, yeah, the other person.
Hello, I'm Stuart Jip, and, well, Jeremy Parrish did get a little bit of sleep, and I am quite hungover today. So this is sure to be the best episode, as you said, of Retronauts ever made.
Yes, exactly.
The best one since the last one,
congratulations.
Am I right, folks?
Congratulations to us for already having put together a masterpiece. And we definitely need to be at our absolute best for this extremely important, extremely objective and historical episode of Retronauts, because we are bringing you factually correct opinions, which sounds inherently contradictory. And yet, here is this episode as proof that such a thing can exist. That's right. It is another ranking hootenanny episode following on the heels of our, what have we done? Mario ranking hootenanny, yep. And Mega Man. Yeah. Maybe some other games. I can't remember.
You did Castlevania without me, bastards.
Or me.
Oh, that was Nadia's joint. Oh. Stuart, you need to do a Sonic hootenanny for sure.
Oh, I'd love to, but how can I do that when all of the games are perfect? It's impossible.
That's true. Well, we've got heroes to throw in there, so you know that can bring down the average.
Can we possibly consider doing a James Pond ranking hootenanny?
You could do like a Euro. There? You could do like a Euro mascot platformer.
That would be fun.
Actually, that would be very amusing. Yeah,
yeah.
Get Zool versus James Pond versus the Gianna sisters. Yeah, I'm seeing like racking up massive download numbers. That's going to be amazing.
I can see it coming. I can see that happening. Yeah.
Diamond, you should do one also. I don't know what that would be necessarily. Ranking Metal Slug. There's not enough of those. I feel like. Maybe a fighting franchise hootenanny?
Street Fighter ranking hootenanny.
90s fighting franchise hootenanny. Time killers in there. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
There's definitely some topics I think I could rank. There's some series I could rank that that I think would entertain at least me and possibly one other viewer, so it's worth it. Listener, you know, this is an audio medium.
I mean, maybe they're just watching their little audio histogram scroll past. I don't know. How you, the audience, choose to consume Retronauts is up to you. I will not judge. I will not criticize.
I don't.
As long as it's within the bounds of legality.
I don't mean to, like, I don't want to say that anyone should definitely do this, but what I usually do when I listen to Retronauts is I draw little faces on my hands. And when someone, when like one person's talking, I'll be like moving my thumb up and down, and I'll be like, what do you think, Bob? Like, blah, 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 blah about this. And then another side, it would be like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's how I do it anyway. I mean, don't do that. You're not allowed to do that. Only I am allowed to do that. So, thanks.
I think that's a great approach. I you know, thinking back to what I just said, I have no idea how you would listen to Retronauts illegally. Like, but if anyone has any ideas, please do not share them with me, because I don't want to be... conflated with your
well,
crimes.
We could make an episode that breaks the law somehow.
Okay. Well, you did mention that you downloaded ROMs of all these games.
Oh, no, I didn't mention that. Shut up.
And then put them on a server. And you actually hacked into the Pentagon and uploaded them to the Pentagon computers. Yeah. So
don't tell them about my website, mstulation.com.
Okay, we'll keep that a secret. Anyway, I guess we have to talk about Zelda games, huh?
Instead of just babbling.
God's sake.
Yeah, Christ, right. So, okay. So this is another hootenanny episode. If you've heard any of these, and by God, you should have heard some of these by now. You absolutely should have, because they're great. They're just like this. They make no sense. The rules for this is that we put together a list of games that are covered under the umbrella here. There have to be some boundaries because game releases and versions get kind of weird. Like in this case, there's only one Link's Awakening entry, even though it's been remade twice. That's just, we don't need to rank each of the remakes. So we put all of those together, and then we go through the list chronologically, talking about these games, and each of us says, like, basically, this is where I think this game falls in the rankings of this franchise. And, you know, for a game that you rank number one, I put a little one in there. And then if another person says, actually, that's the fourth best game, then I put a four in there, and so on. And then I add up those numbers, and at the end of this, we assign rankings based on the lowest number. Whichever has the lowest number of points added up is the best game. And whichever has the greatest number of points added up is a game you should never touch because it's probably toxic.
Speaking of low numbers, we should say off the bat, we are limiting ourselves to the 2D Zelda games, not 3D Zelda games.
Yes. In case you couldn't tell by the title of this episode, it is the Zelda 2D ranking hootenanny. Not the Zelda hootenanny in
general.
And
by the math, you just laid out, two better than three. So, you know, we're already off to a great start. We're ranking the best Zelda game, aka the 2D game.
Sometimes I think about playing a 3D game and I vomit.
That's understandable if you are playing on the original N64, because those textures and the muddiness and the blur, it's not great. The frame rates, good lord. Ugh. I had a rough time learning to love Ocarina of Time because, yes, great ambitious game, defining in so many ways, but also just vomitous in motion.
I had a rough time. So many games
of those eras.
I had trouble learning to love Ocarina of Time, so I stopped and don't.
Okay, well, there you go. Good thing we're not ranking 3D Zelda games, or there would be some viewer mail.
Bring it on.
Listener mail, sorry. Viewer mail too, I guess in Stuart's case, for you know the new finger talking trend. It's all the
old Retronauts fax machine, set it up right above the Retronauts shredder so the mail just goes straight in.
That's a perfect idea. And another perfect idea would be to actually get going on this. So I have identified 12 distinct games. I did accidentally put 13 on here. But it occurred to me that the Game & Watch Zelda, the actual Game & Watch, is not really worth talking about in terms of these other games, because it's not really one of these games.
You seem to have accidentally not put on Wand of Gamelon or Zelda's Adventure.
That's true, because those are also not games. Those are collector's objects that should be purchased for the sake of clout and never, ever actually played.
Those are
shelf candy and, like, you know, action figures and stuff. Those don't count as video games. So we're not talking about the Philips and what was the name of the developer on those? It wasn't PF Magic.
Who cares?
Or something like that. I care. It's history. Like,
PFJ?
Who did Nintendo trust to its second most important franchise just to piss off Sony? That's a critical question. But no, those games are not on here. So the games in question are The Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, The Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening, The Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Ages, and The Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Seasons, two separate games because they are distinct. The Legend of Zelda, The Four Swords, and Four Swords Adventure. Actually, those are kind of two games, but I conflated them into one because they don't really stand. I don't know. It's a messy. We'll talk about it. The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap. The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass, The Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks, The Legend of Zelda A Link Between Worlds, and The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes. So those are the games that we are going to rank, and at the end of this, You are legally bound, that's the end-user license agreement for Retronauts, to agree with these opinions and hold them close to your heart, and then take the game that is bottom-ranked and either put it in the trash bin or send it to Nintendo headquarters with a little note that says, "We are disappointed, don't ever do this again." It's up to you. So, beginning way back in 1987 or 1986, if you are in Japan and said, "I'm going to buy a Famicom disk system," we have The Legend of Zelda, a game that stands out on the shelf because it is very, very shiny, unless you bought the reissued version, in which case you have a rarer version that's somehow worth less than the original. How curious. So, The Legend of Zelda. Do you guys, you folks, have any experience with this particular video game? I'm going to assume yes, because you're here.
No, I've never even heard of it.
I think this is the one with Link, right? The Link game?
I thought it was about Zelda.
She shows up. I'm sure she's there eventually. But there's a Link. There's a Link. There's a Link, and there's a Zelda, and there's a fish man. There's a guy in a turtleneck who's screaming, making noises, and eventually, it all comes together.
I don't know about the turtleneck, but...
with the levers, which way to go?
Yeah, the commercials. Okay, right. I referenced that at the beginning of the episode. The wiki. Dang.
This is the game where the blocks fall and you have to make lines and then they disappear.
Correct. Well, you push the blocks, and it's mostly in the second quest where you have to do a lot of block pushing to get the dungeons. Yeah. Okay, so a better question would be, what is your experience with this game, and what is your opinion of this game?
Well, I'm sure I saw that commercial that made no sense, and it was good enough to get my attention, so I guess mission accomplished, Nintendo. And I played this game, and I just remember being really into it right from the start. I don't know if I had access to all the materials. I don't know if I bought it, or if I rented it, or if I borrowed it from a friend who borrowed it from unknown sources, but I remember playing it a lot. I remember finishing it. I remember just getting involved in, you know, every aspect of trying to find your way through this place, because it really, you know, it's kind of this amazing, you know, we talk about open world stuff, but really this game starts and your opening screen, you've got a path to the left, a path to the right, a path north, and there's a hole in the wall, and it's like, what do you want, kid? Which way do you want to go? You know, if you don't go to the hole in the wall first, you don't have any weapons, so you're kind of in a lot of trouble. But ultimately, you get to pick, you know, and it, at this point, the game's been around for 30 plus years. There are people who don't even need the hole in the wall. Like, you know what? I don't. I'll make my way. I'll scrounge up some nuts and berries and some explosives, and I'll get to the end of the game anyway. You can do that. Well, not the end, because you do need a sword.
Maybe not the nuts and berries, but yes.
Yes.
Explosives, very helpful in this game, and freely available in certain places.
Yeah, if you mind.
What is up with this land of Hyrule? That's just giving little kids free bombs, I tell you what.
But yeah, I think, you know, in contrast to, you know, the game that we probably all played before this on NES, which is, you know, Super Mario Brothers, given the timeline, this is a game that sort of lets you figure stuff out, lets you find your own way. You know, yes, there are 8 dungeons, but almost all of them can be accessed in different orders. You know, some dungeons have things you need to clear other dungeons, but really, you know, there are numerous routes for this game. There's numerous ways to find your way through this game. There's lots of optional things you don't even need, but they're great to find. You know, do you need all the hearts? You don't need all the hearts, but if you get those, the full row, 2 full rows of hearts, and you drink that magic potion, which you don't need also, and you reach max power. Like, I remember that feeling of just filling up my energy and like, oh my God, I am so strong right now. And then Ganon smacks you around and, you know, you're like, oh, well, I'm not that strong anymore, but it's still... It's, you know, it's a fantasy, it's a power fantasy, it's an exploration fantasy, it's a, I am lost, but I'm going to win, I'm lost, but I'm going to win, regardless. And eventually I did. So, yeah, it worked for me. Get a 3.
A 3, okay.
it's not the best Legend of Zelda game, but it is definitely the first Legend of Zelda game, and we can't hold that against it.
You have that correct. It is indeed the first. Stuart, how about you? What was your relationship with The Legend of Zelda? Because I know that, you know, Nintendo tended to roll things out in the UK later than they did the rest of the world. And also that if you lived in the UK and you owned an NES, you were ostracized and mocked by everyone around you.
Hot wax thrown on you and stuff. It was awful.
God, wow, brutal.
Yeah, well,
they just stuck you in Madame Tussauds as like, here's the freak.
The worst part was getting hold of the wax in the first place. That was what was so hard for me. God, this game, like, I got a difficult relationship with this game in the sense that, like some of the other games that on this list that we'll get to, I recognize the importance of it. I recognize that what it did. I recognize what it means to people. And I came to it so late that none of that means anything for my personal enjoyment of it, which exists. I did enjoy this game. When I finally got to play it, which was probably around the sort of GBA years. And I'm not talking about buying the classic NES series version of it. I'm talking about emulating it.
That's good, because that's a terrible way to play it.
Now, that's it. See, now you've got my attention, because I'd like to know in what way, but we'll get to that. So when I played this game, I pretty quickly lost interest, because I was just kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to go on to the next ROM now. You know, that's what downloading ROMs does to you, kids. It turns you into someone who doesn't give games the time they deserve. And coming to play it later, I think, on the GameCube's classic Zelda promotional disc thingy. Mm. Does that ring a bell with anyone?
It does, yes.
Yeah, I had that, and I played it on there, and for the first time I was able to sort of make some semblance of progress, and I think the first and main thing that everyone's thinking that no one's said yet is that this might have the best title screen of any game ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely top five.
Yeah.
Although the next one is pretty badass also.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The next one's pretty sweet. I mean, it's a real, like,
they knew what was up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a Zelda thing. I mean, Ocarina of Time, remember the putting that in and it just goes to like the wistful music and the horse galloping across this vista, and you're like, what? Whoa, I've never seen a video game open like this. So yeah, it's a Zelda thing. They started here.
For me, this is a game that's so like iconic that it's difficult to even think about it as a game that you play. Does that make sense? It's just like it's an item. It's this object of like untouchable importance. And then I'd actually put the time into it much later in my life, and I found sort of like, okay, this, even though this is old as hell, for old NES games, which are often quite difficult to play now, I find, and this is coming from someone who had a Spectrum, so you gotta believe me when I say this, even for an 87 NES game, which are very often difficult, it's very playable. I mean, it has its oddities, it has its puzzles that are sort of maybe slightly too obtuse. I don't know how much of that is down to translation issues or whatever, I have no idea, but the actual dungeons are still really enjoyable to play. They are, it's I don't even know what to say about it, to be honest. I came to it way too late and with way too much pre-information about the game. Way too much of it had been built up in stature, so when I came to it I was a little bit kind of like, oh, that's it, that's all it is, it's just like this. And that's a reflection on my approach to it rather than on the actual game's quality.
So, yeah, let's put a number on this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll give it, God, I think I'd give it a 5.
5.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm kind of in the opposite end of things from you, Stuart, in that, you know, I saw the same ads that Diamond did, and I also saw the rapping ad. And that didn't drive me away. I still said, this seems interesting. And I had friends before I owned an NES who had their game systems. And, you know, I'd go over to their house and they would be playing this game and I would just be fascinated by it. It just seems so mysterious and immense. And finally, you know, beginning of 1988, I got my own NES. And within a few months, I borrowed Zelda from someone who was tired of it at that point. And, yeah, I just I became just enraptured by the world. It was so immense and so mysterious. I had to do a lot of kind of shenanigans to find my way around, but that was part of the experience, was, you know, getting lost and being confused and getting together with your friends before school, you know, when you're just hanging out waiting for the bell to start and saying, okay, well, I don't know what to do here. And they will say, oh, well, I think this is what you're supposed to do, and kind of sharing that information back and forth. And that was a great way to play. And, you know, around this time, this was when the first few issues of Nintendo Power had arrived. And those were packed with information about Zelda tips and maps and things like that, beyond what was kind of included with the game. So, you know, eventually I did manage to finish the first quest and then rolled right into the second quest. And Nintendo Power had some tips on, like, kind of things you need to look for in the second quest. And I ended up rolling through that in basically like 4 or 5 days over the summer. And just said, this is it. This is the kind of game that I love. This is awesome. And, you know, it is such a huge step forward for game design at that point. There just wasn't anything like it around. There were games that kind of hinted in that direction, but it just really pushed the art of game design forward in so many ways. And, you know, it does have some opaque parts that are just kind of, you're taking the best guess. There's you know, really loose clues, and you're supposed to figure out some vague riddles. The places where you have to just bomb at a certain point or burn something. But this was very much the state of video game design at the time. You know, this came on the heels of games like Falcom's Sorcerian or Romancia and Namco's Tower of Draga. Like, those games directly influenced this one, and those were just full of bullshit, like obtuse, unfriendly secrets that there was no realistic way for anyone to figure out on their own. Whereas Zelda, even though it does have a lot of these, you know, arcane hidden secrets, for the most part, you know, aside from one or two parts where you have to kind of get lucky with the pay me for information lady or whatever, there's a rule to everything. There's a system. Like, there's never going to be more than one hidden entrance on a single screen. So if you manage to find the cave or the whatever is hidden beneath a bush or, you know, whatever it is that's on a screen of the overworld, you can stop looking there because you're not going to find anything else. So it's kind of figuring out the way the processes work and just sort of stumbling your way around and maybe going into a dungeon that it's way too powerful for you at that point. You've totally gone out of order. What have you done? That just makes it interesting and makes it really feel like, hey, there's this world for you to explore, kids. So get out there and do it. So yeah, it's hard for me to divorce the game itself and its age, which, you know, it has aged. But it's hard for me to divorce all of that from my own perspectives. And this is really the one game in the series that I can just go back to anytime, jump in and dick around for an hour, 3 hours, and finish it. And it's still interesting and fun. And I still get that sensation of watching that title screen of the waterfall, and just the impact that its graphics and music and mysteries had on me. So I'm giving this one a one. Yep.
Hot damn.
It's my favorite. Wow. I'm sorry to kind of spoil the big surprise at the very beginning, but that's my number one.
Holy hot gosh, damn.
I love it.
And that's Retronauts. Good night, everybody.
Right? Yep. Told you, 20 minutes. Thank you. This was 4:20:69. Have a great one, everyone.
Can I briefly mention, they remade this, didn't they, for the Satellaview thing?
They did. Yep.
It's more of a reimagining. It's actually, it's worth an episode all its own, but it is a fascinating game that sort of integrates the original game with some, you know, like an audio drama and some sort of metagame stuff where, you know, special powers can be added to the game at certain times, and you have to beat the game within a certain amount of limit. And, you know, everything's been rearranged a little bit. It's like you can only clear so many dungeons at so many times. And it is fascinating. I do recommend, if you go online, you can see people, you know, fan modders, you know, God bless them. They have managed to create an English language version of the broadcast, and you can run it with the ROM. And so you can indeed play this game in English today, but you still have to run with the time limit, and people do it. And it's fascinating. I've watched, you know, several people I care about play through it online. And it was for the Super Nintendo Satellaview system, so it looks a little better, although it also looks a little weirder, so you know, it's
Yeah, I left the Satellaview games off of here just because it's a lot to ask people
to play those.
You know, they're so inaccessible for the West, but even in Japan, like, not that many people had a Satellaview. So, but yes, there have been several remakes of this, reissues, all through the years. And, you know, the people love to use randomizers on the ROM to just mix things up and basically create a new game experience for themselves, or to create, you know, kind of as Diamond mentioned, alternate rule sets, like you can't pick up the sword, you can't pick up the hearts, or, you know, you have to complete the game doing this or that. It lends itself to it's a sandbox game. It really is. It was one of the first really, truly great, successful sandbox games. We're like a quarter of the way through this episode, and we've only talked about one game. So let's roll on ahead to Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. Stuart, this one is very controversial, so I'm curious to hear your take on it, because you tend to have very interesting takes on controversial games.
Yeah, wait, just you wait, my dear friend, just you wait. Yeah, I really like this game. It gets a lot of crap for being unusual in the series, but by this point, the rules hadn't even been written, so what makes it unusual, you know? They were trying something different. I suppose there's a sense to which it's more conventional with the lives and the EXP and all that sort of thing, but I just think it's a darned enjoyable time. It's difficult to even know what to say about it, because it's just so... There's so much written, there's so much said, but when they haven't even established a pattern for the series, I don't understand why it's such a controversial thing to take a different direction like this. The side-scrolling stuff is maybe a little familiar, but nobody said they weren't allowed to do that, and of course they did it again later in stuff like Link's Awakening to a lesser sort of degree. The abilities and upgrades and such were also brought back in later games. It's not quite the sort of black sheep that you'd think it is. But I don't know, man. It's just a fine action game. I kind of like it better than the first one, but that's only because I guess I'm just a crazy weird guy.
So put a number on it.
Yeah, I think I'd give it a 4, just slightly above Legend of Zelda.
All right. Fight Club. Is this part of the Fight Club, or should it be cast out?
Well, certainly after playing through the first game and really enjoying it, I was definitely, you know, I was one of those kids who was ready and waiting for this game. I'm sure I'd wait a long time, because this is from, you know, the era of chip shortages, and who knows when I actually got to play it. It might not have been till maybe 89, who knows, but I remember playing through it, and I remember playing through it a lot, and I remember at some point I got good enough that I could just sit down and just beat it. You know, that's what happened. I know that happened. It is really hard. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that aged it at this point, is the fact that it is so difficult to get a handle on things. The fact that it introduces lives and introduces penalties for running out of lives. And that to me is just a very frustrating thing. And depending on which version you have, if you run out of lives, you actually lose levels of things you've earned, which is like, that's infuriating. But I think the 2D action is excellent. You know, the combat feels fantastic. It is certainly, you know, it's really hard to fight guys with swords and shields, and, you know, it takes a lot of practice. You got to learn how to do it. You know, I know, once you get the hang of it, you can do it. And I know there's people who can just cheese their way through the last boss, but I think it's a tremendous game. And I think it really was, you know, certainly at the time, some people rewrite history and say, oh, we didn't like it. No, it was fantastic at the time. Everyone loved it. And It's just really hard, so it is kind of more frustrating. And the fact that Nintendo, the company as a whole, just kind of like as soon as it was done, every Zelda since seems to have gone way back in the other direction. So I feel like Nintendo as a whole is just kind of like, yeah, they're not ashamed of it, but they're also not really embracing embracing the model of used. And I know there's definitely, there's a quote out there from Miyamoto saying this is his only bad game, but like, you can put gigantic air quotes around bad. But I think it's a really good game. So as far as my ranking, I'm giving it a 5. I think it is a very good Zelda game. And certainly, do I like the first one better? Yes. Do I like ones that came after it better? Yes. But that doesn't mean this is bad. It just means it's not as great as the other legendary level games. So I think 5 is good.
All right. Yeah, you know, I'm going to slightly refute what you said about people at the time liked it, loved it. it was actually pretty choppily received among my peer group. I wasn't sure what I felt about it. I enjoyed it, but I also felt like there's something off about this. And it's only been later that I've kind of come back to appreciate it. And I feel like it's very flawed, but I also feel like with a little bit of refinement, this is a game that really desperately needs a proper remake, you know, in the style of Samus Returns or something. Because if they could iron over some of the issues, and they took a swing at that, really, when they converted it to the US version and rebalanced how the leveling works, I think you have a real masterpiece here. But it is sort of rough and flawed, and you know it needs that extra pass. But there's so much about this game, you know, as has been mentioned, that carried into some of the later games. I mean, you said that they stopped making games like this after Zelda 2 and all the others went back to the style, but the spirit of this game really lives on in the 3D tradition, which is, which, you know, the starting with Ocarina, where you have the lock on and, you know, using your shield and the shield height are very, very important, and kind of managing space between Link and his opponents. Like that's all taken from Zelda 2. I think what they realized was just that, you know, Zelda doesn't necessarily work as a side scroller, but the combat concepts that they introduced here, they're really liked, and you know, just the overall flow of things. The one thing that hasn't returned has been the experience-based leveling system, which they, you know, they've just never gone back to that and said, yeah, it's not the way we do things. But a lot of other things about this game are still kind of baked into the Zelda series at this point, and are very, very sort of essential. But anyway, back to the game itself. Yeah, you know, like if the first Zelda was Nintendo's attempt to take on Namco's Tower of Draga, this was their attempt at Dragon Buster. And when you look at it in that context, again, you know, compare it to something like Sorcerian or Xanadu or Dragon Buster or other games that kind of came out around the same time, like the Wing of Medulla. Like, this is just so far advanced. I mean, the movement is so good. The combat is really, really slick. Everything just, like, playing it feels great. Link becomes much more powerful. It's interesting that he doesn't really use tools in this besides the hammer. His skills are really based around combat and magic attacks, which is really different. But, you know, it just kind of changes the focus from being about collecting tools and more about, like, making Link a stronger, more powerful, more capable character. And I think that's, you know, very influential in a lot of other games. And yeah, I'd love to see a proper remake of this someday. And I know there are tons of developers out there who agree and would love to have the opportunity to remake Zelda 2. Like, I know Joachim Sandberg, you know, the guy who created Iconoclast, like, he kind of got his start and sort of, not got a start, but sort of came into the public eye doing a sort of recreation of Zelda 2 called Legend of Princess.
I remember that. That was pretty good.
I know people at WayForward would love to do Zelda 2. And so they made, you know, an Adventure Time game that is basically Zelda 2. So yeah, like it's a great game, just one with a lot of flaws based on, you know, resulting just from its ambition and its sense of let's change things up. And this was kind of their attempt to see, like, how far can we push Zelda? And then sort of, you know, for subsequent games, they reeled it in, but they needed to push the boundaries. And it's something that a lot of developers never do with a popular established franchise. Like, you know, they get a hit and they keep doing that hit. Whereas Zelda, you know, Nintendo had a hit with that game and then said, let's see where else we can go with it. And then kind of took that data, correlated it, and started making masterpieces. So anyway, all that is to say, I'm going to give this a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, I'm actually rating it lower than all of you. It's very middle of the road for me. There's potential there, but it doesn't quite reach it. But still, very good game. So now we travel forward in time and generations to the 16-bit era and The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, a game that some would call the greatest game ever. Do you agree? Who agrees? Who disagrees? I want to hear about it.
I disagree.
Don't say 12. Don't say 12.
I'm not going to say 12. I feel so like a hill talking about this game. I played this after Link's Awakening, which A Link's Awakening is essentially a compact version of this game. Obviously, that's not entirely true, but bear with me here, okay? When I played Link to the Past, what I experienced was thinking, man, this game takes a long time to do anything, like to get anywhere or do anything. Like Link's Awakening with its kind of flick screen, one puzzle per screen sort of thing. That was what I was expecting. And when I came to this and you got this huge sprawling world that then eventually becomes two huge sprawling worlds, I was just kind of like, nah, not for me. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I love the music. The atmosphere is extremely impressive, especially right at the beginning. The sheer number of tools you have at your disposal is pretty impressive as well, and must have been even more impressive at the time. After coming off, well, let's face it, coming off the original Legend of Zelda, which this is a hugely spruced up take on, and much, 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 much friendlier. I couldn't bring myself to give it anything in the double digits, because that just seems so damn mean, you know? I'm giving it a 9, because I just can't with this game. It's so not what I want to play from a Zelda game. This big sprawling 2D thing that I just wish I liked it better, but I just don't. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Retronauts.
Okay, well, so Stuart's going to be canceled by the internet. What about you, Diamond?
This was a big deal to me when it came out. You know, it had been a couple of years since the 8-bit game. It definitely had a lot of anticipation around it. And I remember playing it for the first time, and I remember just being blown away by the spectacle that they front load it with. You know, they give you this big scrolling story. They give you, you know, they give Link a family, and then they take that family away from him, and they tell you to find Zelda, and you find Zelda really fast. You know, it's like, oh, here's Zelda. I found her.
You're like, wow, game over already.
Yeah. But then things don't quite work out. You've got to search for things. You've got to find, you know, 3 whatchamacallits. Then all of a sudden Zelda's gone, and now, oh, we got to do more. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned how much the Zelda 2 held influence over the 3D games, but really, the format of The Link to the Past, this became the format of the 3D games almost perfectly. It's like, you go out, you find usually mm-hmm. 3 things, and then you bring them somewhere, and it's like, okay, good job, now you gotta find 8 more things. And usually, now it's like, now the time where we, you know, either go to another world, or there's 2 worlds, or there's a night-day mechanics, something happens. So, this really became the template for a lot of games that followed it, and some of those games are beloved. I do love this game. This is definitely, you know, even more than Zelda 2, this was a game that I would just play over and over and over again. I would mess around with it. I would break it. I definitely, at one point, I know, like the shovel. You're not supposed to have the shovel all the time. You only get it to get the ocarina that's, you know, hidden somewhere. Once you dig it up, like that's the new item you get. You don't need the shovel anymore. But I know I once, after playing this game, I don't know how many times, I took the shovel and went to the treasure game where you're supposed to dig up the treasure with a shovel you basically rent. But I was like, oh, well, what happens if I just go in there with my own shovel? I don't need his shovel. I'll just go in there and shovel everything. And I did, and I think I broke the game because after a while I stopped finding anything. And then on subsequent playthroughs, I never found that piece of heart again, ever. Like, for the rest of that cartridge's life. So I think I somehow irreparably damaged my ROM by breaking this game. And that's amazing. I love it. Because, you know, it doesn't really matter, but it's like every time after that I played that game, I always had whatever it is, like 19 and three quarters hearts. I never got that last piece every time. But yeah, I just think this is a fantastic game. It's my number two.
Number two.
Yes.
All right.
It's my number two.
And I'm putting it at, looks like number three, because I do think it's a really great game. It's so influential on so many other games. And, you know, it was a little bit of a letdown to me when I first played it, just because there was no second quest. I was like, wait a minute. And, you know, I felt the same way with Super Metroid. Like, I beat it, and then I couldn't play as just Samus, you know, with my power-ups already equipped. It was very disappointing. Something was definitely lost in the transition from 8 to 16-bit. But, you know, you look at all the things that were gained, and the structure of this game, the world design is really phenomenally put together, the way the two different parallel worlds interlock. Like, no one had really done that effectively on this scale in a video game, basically giving you two spaces and saying, how do these relate to one another? And, you know, some of the spaces, their relationship doesn't make physical sense if you really look at them. Like, especially, you know, with the pyramid at the end and the way you can warp between spaces, you're like, but he's, you know, like way off the ground in one world. And if I transport between state places, he's not. But, you know, you just kind of look past that, and it challenges you to think laterally. And I just feel like everywhere you look, there's some sort of secret or bonus hidden, you know, like under the bridge, or just going into caverns or something and saying, oh, I wonder if I can do this. And hey, there's a little piece of heart for your trouble. So yeah, you know, as you said, Diamond, there's so much of this game kind of informing the way the later games work. But I feel like this one's a lot leaner than subsequent games that are kind of styled in the format of A Link to the Past. And, you know, you only have X number of heart pieces as opposed to billions of them. You know, it doesn't feel like there's just too much to do. It's just the right amount of stuff to do. And it is impressive how the game just kind of rolls out this bigger and bigger scope as you play, even though it's, you know, it's already kind of an open world. Once you get out of the palace and, you know, the game begins properly, you can pretty much go anywhere, but somehow they manage to cram a ton of stuff into that space. So yeah, a really, really impressive game. I don't think it has quite the same purity as the NES game. It's a little more structured, and I kind of like the looseness and sandbox feel of the first game, but still, like, it'd be hard for me to say, like, this isn't just a towering achievement of game design. You know, Stuart may disagree, but that's okay. That's what these hootenannies are for. It's for all of us to come together and put a number on things, and that number for me is three. So we move along for Zelda's downgrade in terms of technology. But is it a downgrade in terms of video game design? I think we know where Stuart stands on The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. But where do you stand, Diamond?
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have nodded off there.
Sorry. I was talking too long.
Jeremy, it's Link's Awakening. I'm doing a bit.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm just blowing hot air like the windfish.
It's okay. This was a genuine surprise at the time. I think I certainly had a Game Boy, and even though this was quote unquote late in the Game Boy's life, we had no idea how late the Game Boy would actually live. But at this point, it seemed a little late. You're like, with Game Boy? Oh yeah, I still have one of those, sure. And it was such a delight to play this game and find, you know, right from the start, it's like it gives you a taste of things that you recognize. Like, well, here's definitely Link, and oh, you got a sword, you got a shield, and you know, you've got a space you can explore, but there's, you know, a little more restrictions than you might expect. But also, there's a lot of people. You meet a lot more people than you meet in most Zelda games. And some of them are weird, and some of them are funny, and some of them are angry, and some of them, you know, will murder you if you steal from them. And some of them only talk to you over the phone. And if you find them in person, they don't talk to you anymore. Like, there's a ghost. There's a ghost that follows you. There's a dog chain chomp. There are Goombas. Like, I think at one point I wrote that this almost feels like a parody of a Zelda game. And, you know, it, by its arrival, you know, they've had enough good Zelda games. You could eventually make a silly Zelda game, but I just loved it. And I think, yeah, it's a little silly to have a whole game revolve around a dream, but I gotta say, when I first played it, that legit shocked me. I was like, oh, wait, what if this isn't real? You know, and then, you know, eventually you play through it and you sort of, you come to the point where it's like, well, I'm playing this game, so it's real to me, you know? Like, I feel like that's the revelation I hope most people have when they play this game. So, you know, it's one of those games that I, you know, I played it, I enjoyed it. I probably didn't touch it for a very long time. Maybe not until, it was one of the early games that came to the eShop on the 3DS when as part of their Game Boy series. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing it again on 3DS and just being so enamored by it all over again. I really enjoyed it. And so for me, this is my number one. This is my number one Zelda game. I really like it. And I think
I think
it's very special. I really do. I have a very strong feeling. Whenever I play through it, I always have a very strong emotional connection to it.
Yeah, same.
My gosh. Man, I'm going to have to give this a 12 to balance things out. Okay, Stuart.
Yeah, it's my one. It's my number one. It was never in question. It was always going to be my number one. Now, I originally wondered if that was because it was the first one I played and I had this kind of nostalgia for it. But having revisited it many times, I don't think that that's the case. I'm sure that informs me on some level. But this is exactly what I want from not just a Zelda game, but from a handheld game. It's this individual, screen by screen. There's something interesting on every single screen in this game, and I think there are something like 300 screens if you don't count even the dungeons. Every dungeon gives you a new item that opens up the overworld even more. All of the dungeons are different, distinct. You get, when you replay the game, you're like, oh yes, it's this dungeon. It's the dungeon with the giant bird. It's the dungeon with the Pole's voice puzzle. God, there's just too much good about it. I get emotional when I play this game, especially when I hear Ballad of the Windfish, which I don't know how they managed to do it through the Game Boy speaker, but they made something that sounds completely infused with soul somehow. I love how scrappy the combat is, how a lot of time you really are just mashing the sword button, getting this big, almost Sega Mega Drive-style feedback off of the boss battles as they flash and explode and they get more and more, visually impressive. It's just not a difficult game almost at any point, I would argue. I've been maybe fighting the Nightmare towards the end when you need to use a different item to damage him in each form, but even then, that's only just a matter of trial and error. That's not that bad.
And if you actually do that entire swap quest, you get the boomerang, and I think, doesn't it kill one form in one hit?
Like, I think you might be right. Yeah, that's the thing. I can't remember because there's just so much packed into this. I don't know how they managed it. Like, I could just sit here and reel things off. Like, Crazy Tracy, memorable character, the trendy game. Why is it called the trendy game? Who knows? But it's in there anyway. As you mentioned, the fella on the telephone whose name escapes me right now. The fact that the game eventually leads you back to the main village where you push aside the giant memorial thing and go underneath it to find even more game. The whole opening where you make your way down to the beach to get your sword and then the Legend of Zelda theme kicks in and it's the coolest thing ever. It's the best thing ever. Okay, while I've got time, I know this episode's going to wear on if we keep going on, but I just want to say that my number one is officially for the original Link's Awakening and not for the DX version and not for the remake. The DX version is fine if you have no other access to the game. I suppose you could play the DX version, and I won't come round your house and kill you. But the colour is fine. The additional dungeon is rubbish, and the item you get for it is rubbish because it basically spoils one of the other items that you get in the game anyway. It adds nothing. Don't play the DX version if you can. If you have no other choice, then do play it. It's fine. It's a 9 out of 10 compared to the original, which is a 10. And
what about the Switch version?
It's not for me. They made it scrolling. They made it so that every time you transition between the screen, the game chugs for some reason. They didn't patch the performance. I don't know what they were thinking. It looks amazing. It looks like a little diorama. It looks beautiful. But for me, you just can't replace that screen by screen, flick screen charm, scrappy charm of the original. When you add more money and nicer visuals to that, it doesn't improve it in any way. It just cheapens it, if anything. What they originally made is so soulful and so characterful, and there are so many things I haven't even mentioned that are just wonderful in that game. But the remake was just like, it's fine, it's not a bad game, it's just not the original, and the original's too important to me, I can't let go of it. So, yeah, it's not for me, that remake, but it's fine.
All right. And yeah, I love this game too. I mean, it's hard not to. Who doesn't love Link's Awakening? I haven't played the Switch version at all because I put together, like, I played and recorded and made a video on the DX version, you know, in anticipation of the Switch game. So I was like, I don't need to play this right away. Mm-hmm. But you know, any version that I've played, the first two, they're great games. It is kind of the happy medium between the original Zelda and a Link to the Past. It takes a lot of structural and quest concepts from A Link to the Past, but then simplifies things to make it, you know, just more bite-sized, a little more open, you know, even without the select scroll glitch that lets you break the game wide open. There's just a lot of freedom in this. Sometimes you're kind of funneled to go specific places, but other times you're just kind of left to explore the island, and there are places you can see and you can't quite get there. It's got that great Metroidvania thing going on. You know, it's just really nice, and it really does, I'd say, do more with the Game Boy hardware than anyone could ever have imagined was possible when that system first launched. And, you know, I think stuff like Pokemon would eventually sort of exceed it in terms of complexity and depth and substance. But just in terms of a very appealing, satisfying action adventure game that interprets Zelda for a limited handheld system, this is way better than the Game & Watch. But like I said, you know, it's the perfect blend of the first game and the third. And so I'm going to give it the score in between, a 2. So yes. I don't think anyone's going to be topping this one. Maybe, you know, if we had thrown Wand of Gamelon in here.
Best Zeld. It's official now, folks.
After Link's Awakening, Nintendo was like, it's time for some 3D games and, you know, a remake of Link's Awakening with some color and a bad dungeon. But it was like 7 or 8 years before we finally got another proper original 2D Zelda game. And that was originally conceived as a 3-part series that would all interlock with passwords and feed off each other's quests. And at some point, the developers on this flagship and Capcom, working with Nintendo, said, whoa, that's just ridiculous. We can't do this. It's too complicated. There's too much going on. So they stripped it down to 2 games, complementary pairs, and I think they work really well together as sort of like, here are the two facets of Zelda. So we're going to talk about both of these games together, but you know, we'll give them each separate ratings because they are very different games. For me, Oracle of Ages, and its counterpart, Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages really represents a Link to the Past, and even more to that point, or more to that end, the post-Ocarina of Time approach to Zelda, where it's very quest-driven, very much about, like, specific chains of quests. I mean, you know, Link's Awakening had the trading quest, which was a really fun little thing you could do, and sometimes was required for the plot. But Oracle of Ages is really all about, like, you know, talk to someone, go do things, travel through time, swap things, acquire things, bring them to a place. It's very, very sort of rigid in terms of its critical path and doesn't offer a lot of freedom. I don't remember much about the dungeons. I just remember that it's very, very, it just feels very, very structured. Whereas Oracle of Seasons, from what I understand, it began life as a remake of the original Legend of Zelda, and it really feels like it, in that it is a much more open game. You have a lot of freedom to just wander around and, you know, explore the world, the overworld, and the dungeons and the bosses are very reminiscent of the original Zelda. But both of these games each have a gimmick that ties in with the name. Ages, you're traveling between time. I believe there's past and present. And then, like I said, it has been a while. And then Oracle of Seasons, you gain a rod that allows you to basically change the time of year of the overworld, which will have different effects. Like it'll freeze over water, or, you know, if you transfer to fall, then, you know, it causes leaf piles to appear. If you shift to spring, then, you know, maybe things are revealed and open up. So it kind of encourages you to explore and opens up surprising paths. And yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed Oracle of Seasons. I want to revisit that someday. It's a really solidly built game, really, really captures the feel of the original Zelda in a lot of ways, but much more, you know, refined, focused, structured. So yeah, let's see. Where did I put that? I put that as, well, it doesn't sound like I'm super, super positive on it, but it's just because the top Zelda games are all so good. I put this one at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, but 7 is still damn good when we're talking about Zelda games. Oracle of Ages, I didn't enjoy that one, actually. I put that one down at 11. 11. Okay, so those are my opinions, 7 and 11. It's like the convenience store of Zelda, playing on a portable system. You can also play these on a Game Boy Advance and get a little bonus unlock in each game that is completely pointless. But then, once you complete both, you put a password together and you can fight the true boss, who surprisingly enough is Ganon. Oh, I'm sorry for spoiling it. Anyway, Stuart, what do you think about these games?
I was pretty excited about these. I didn't get to play them immediately when they came out, but I was pretty hyped about them because I had played Link's Awakening by this point, and this just looked like two more full games of Link's Awakening stuff, basically. Coming to play them a bit later, now, I tend to try and have trouble remembering which of these games is which, but Oracle of Ages, as you've said, was the one that was sort of puzzle-led. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, I would argue it might be a touch too puzzle-led. Because I remember my most strong memory of this is I'm fairly sure that this is the game where you get stranded on an island with monkeys at one point. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you have to go around trading stuff with the monkeys, which will take one of your items but give you another one in order to get off the island. And I was on that island for 1,000 hours. I could not get off that friggin' island because I could not figure out how to solve this stupid monkey puzzle for all of my infinity of my life, and I grew old and died and was re-resurrected and still couldn't finish the friggin' monkey puzzle. Seasons, on the other hand, quite liked it. Felt like a more breezy, sort of combat-led sort of a game. If I had to put numbers on them, which I have to do because you said we did, I think I would give Ages a... you know what? I think I'm going to give it a 10.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect 10. Seasons, however, I did enjoy more, but it's still overshadowed by the games that I really loved, so I'm going to go for 6 on that one.
Okay. And finally, Diamond, bring it on home.
Forget monkeys, man.
Yeah, it didn't... I had some problems, I think. When this game came out, I think I was a little put off by the idea of having two different games. I felt like, oh, is this a Pokemon thing? What's going on? And so I didn't play them right away, and over the years I've tried to revisit them through emulation, through Virtual Console, and each time I try to start them, I just don't get hooked. So even though I've heard good things, I know that these games have a lot of fans behind them, I really have spent very little time with these games, because each time I try to open this world up, I just feel like, oh, it felt derivative. I forget which one it is, but like, there's a, like, right from the start, you go and you see someone singing in front of a bunch of animals. I'm like, so it's Marin. It's Marin, right? No, it's not Marin. It's someone else. Oh, it's a beautiful singer and we all need to listen to her sing. It's like, but we've done this. I did this already. You can't do this to me again, game. We already did this. We did this, the animal singer. We can't. So I don't hate them, but I also don't love them because I have not given them their proper due. So I'm sort of ranking them in the middle as almost placeholders just because I've never dived into them to the point that I really have experienced the full thing.
But I feel like that in itself is a sort of judgment. Like if these Zelda games can't pull you in, then my God.
Yeah, no, it reflects them. That's why I'm able to talk about them. You know, if I felt like I couldn't talk about them at all, I would recuse myself, you know, because this is legally binding. You know, this is very important what we're doing here.
Yeah, we don't want to impeach you.
So I'm going to go ahead. I say Seasons is 7 and Ages is 8, just because they're next to each other and they're sitting right next to each other on my 3DS right now. I could play them right now, but I don't want to. I want to, but I don't want to.
I think it's interesting that I really like Oracles and gave it the same score that you gave in your indifference. So I'm really curious to hear about the games you really, really don't like. It's going to be interesting. So maybe we should move along to some of those. Maybe the next game in the list is one that you hate. So tell us, Diamond, why do you hate the Four Swords and Four Swords Adventure? These are like this was a little tricky one to rank because Four Swords originally debuted as like a bonus mode in the Game Boy Advance re-release of A Link to the Past. But then they sort of built it out into a separate standalone adventure for GameCube. So I'm just kind of combining those together because both of them work around the same premise, which is that you need to team up with other players and have cool, fun multiplayer adventures. There's you know, a single player component to these, but it's really best played in tandem with people. You know, by yourself, it's just kind of like this boring puzzle game. With other people, it's like a puzzle game adventure as a party game, which is weird, but good. So where do you stand on these?
Well, as you said, as a single player game, it's just not that much fun. And I never had, you know, I never had the supposed ideal situation where we all had our Game Boy Advances hooked up to our GameCube and we were all doing, you know, the Pac-Man thing or whatever. I never got to experience that. I think
Miyamoto's going to cry.
I know. He's desperate listening to this podcast.
All that E3 promotion for nothing.
He's pouring shochu into a bottomless glass as we speak.
putting that bottomless glass on a tea table and flipping the tea table over.
So
he's mad now. He's real
yeah,
mad.
Yeah, I think I probably didn't put too much time into this game until, help me out here. Didn't it came back on DS or 3DS as sort of like a freebie? Like
it was a DSi game, I think.
Yeah. So I remember playing this later on and giving it more time, but also still feeling like, nah, it's not what I want. This isn't what I want. So, you know, as we just said, if I gave two games that I really have not found the motivation to play through entirely, if I gave them 7 and 8, then I'm knocking this way down to 10. I've never gotten to do it.
Slam.
You know, again, maybe if I had the friends and the hardware and the gumption to go on a quest with a bunch of friends and find the fourth sword, as they call it, but No.
Stuart, how about you? Do you have friends or maybe just like random vagrants that you've invited into your home to play Zelda with you?
These vagrants are my friends, Jeremy.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That was really rude of me, just to assume.
Burn!
Yeah. I bring them in and we play games, and when I'm finished with them, I eat them. Anyway, Four Swords is a game that I have to admit did sort of pass me by in the GameCube era because this was the first time in my life, really, when I actually had enough money to buy my own games consoles. So I bought my GameCube for myself, and I was loving it. And let's face it, there was not really a shortage of Zelda games on the GameCube with Wind Waker, Twilight Princess. So this had the feeling of a bit of a I don't know, a bit of a side game sort of feeling, you know what I mean? And over here in the UK, it wasn't that easy to get a hold of because it was sold in a big package with the game. I want to say the Game Boy Advance Link cable came packaged in with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was the case with you guys as well, but
I don't believe so. But that's a sensible way to hedge bets for sure.
But the fact is, even if I'd had that Link cable, as with Diamond, I just didn't have a group of three other friends with Game Boy Advances so I could bring together in that manner. It just wasn't really feasible. It wasn't really on the cards. So I've only ever played this game in single-player mode, which feels wrong. It's not meant to be played that way. Though, having said that, if it wasn't, they wouldn't have included single-player mode at all. So I guess I can judge it on that basis. I think I'm going to have to give it 11. And that's not because I think it's a bad game, really. The quality of this list is so generally quite high.
Didn't you already give Oracle of Ages 11?
I think you gave it 11.
Oh, okay. That was me. Okay.
You made yourself 11 joke.
Yeah, I did. I was so funny and I forgot. Oh, God.
And then when I said 10, you said perfect 10.
Yes, I blinded myself with my own wit.
Yeah, you did. It's okay.
Terrible.
It's okay. It happens. It happens. When the wit hits certain reflective surfaces, it really does get in your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wit and gin on a Sunday morning.
So no, it's not that I think this is a bad...
No gin.
No gin. He's already drank the gin. There's no more gin. I want to make it clear, though, that I don't think this is necessarily bad. I just have never been put in a position where I can appreciate it to the peak of its... I suppose of the offers. It got great reviews at the time. People were always saying this is the most amazing game if you can get your mates together to play it. But no, I was just going like, yeah, sorry guys, we can't play Four Swords, so I'm afraid we have to play Time Splitters 2 for 16 hours again. And they were just like, oh no, not Time Splitters 2, not the best game ever. Okay, carry on, sorry.
All right, so for me, this game is one of those instances of me being perfectly positioned to properly enjoy it, which is to say working in the games press and having roommates who also worked in the games press, and therefore being able to basically pull together a team of kids to play this darn game anytime we wanted. As a multiplayer experience, Four Swords is really, really fun. It's like I said, kind of almost like a party experience. You're shouting at each other. You're frustrated because someone's trying to do something and you see how the puzzle should work in your head and you can't express it to them. And so you're just, swinging your sword angrily at them and flailing in the air because they just don't get it. It's just, experiences like that. I don't know. It does that thing Nintendo does so well where it's simultaneously cooperative and competitive, like Mario Brothers, they manage to make you rely on other people, but also stab them in the back at the first opportunity. And, at the end of every mission or quest or whatever, you're ranked according to, I think, who earns the most rupees. It's been a while since I played, but, there is this kind of like, who was the best here? But at the same time, You can't be too dickish because you still have to rely on each other to solve certain puzzles and advance past certain challenges. So it really, it's a test of friendship, trust, and I don't know. It does that Nintendo thing, like I said. So after some soul searching, I decided to give this an 8, which, is still like, it's in the top 2/3. It's only the bottom third that I'm kind of like, meh. Everything above this point is still pretty darn good. So Nintendo continued to do the portable thing. Actually, from this point out, it looks like all the 2D Zelda games are portable.
Banished,
I wonder what
banished.
That means. I guess if you consider the Switch as a console as opposed to a handheld, which is incorrect.
I very rarely
then
my...
Then you have the Link's Awakening remake. But yes, so from this point on, we kind of committed to portable systems, and so Nintendo went back to Flagship and Capcom and said, do us another one of those, but this time in 16 bits. And we got The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap for Game Boy Advance. So how do we feel about this game?
I really like this one. I got this with my Triforce Game Boy Advance SP, and I had a lot of fun with it, although I got stuck almost all the time because it's surprisingly difficult.
Well, and also the UK version had a had some sort of bug in it where you could actually get stuck, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad I didn't run into that then, because I would, that would have been horrendous.
This one came out in the UK before the US, and they refinement on the US version. It was only like by a matter of a few months, but I actually imported the European version.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, I am the I'm the GBA reviewer guy. I got to do this. Actually, I played this entire game. This was just after the DS came out. So I played the whole damn game on my DS, and that was probably not the ideal approach. But anyway, yes, the Minish Cap. So please, what's cool about this game?
I think a lot of things are cool about this game. I think the central idea is really interesting, that you you know, you can shrink down and see the environments from this different perspective, and it allowed for a lot of creativity in the design. The overworld in this game, I felt, took a leap. Well, I was about to say took a leap out of Skyward Sword, but Skyward Sword was much later than this.
It was, yes.
But what it has that I do appreciate is the it's very tight. It's very sort of compact. If I remember correctly, it doesn't actually have that many dungeons. And a lot, every dungeon you are essentially just constantly solving puzzles, constantly doing stuff. It's a little bit like Oracle of Ages in that respect, but a bit less aggressively, I would say. It's very difficult in places. There's a lot of parts where you're kind of, I found myself kind of unsure what to do next, but I don't know if that's because I'm just an idiot or if the game is actually quite tricky. I loved the fact that the overworld was quite puzzle rich as well. There was a lot of areas where you could shrink and change things up in that respect. I really liked it so much that I don't even know what to say about it like some of the other ones, and I feel kind of bad about that because that's what Retronauts is for, saying things about video games.
It's true. we do say things about video games.
Like the fact that he had a talking hat in this one. That really worked for me. What's the name? Enzo or something? Or Ezio? Ezio? That's the guy from Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah, can't be Ezio. Ezio, that's it.
Ezio, yeah. I enjoyed that, and the fact that you had a basically built-in, for God's sake, tell me what to do next button with him as well. I like the fact they incorporated some of the four-sword-style puzzles by making one of the later items you get the ability to multiply yourself in certain areas. I just thought, yeah, very creative, surprisingly difficult, especially the final boss, which was an absolute pig, but fun. A final boss where you have to shrink mid-fight is really cool, like, to get inside it and dismantle bits of it and stuff. That was really cool. Yeah, good game, and if I had to put a number on it, honestly, for me, I'd say 3.
3? Very exciting.
I dug it.
So, let's hand the mic to Diamond and get a perspective here. How do you feel about your pal Ezio?
You know, I thought his name was Cappy. it's unfair, but this came out when I was in a weird place as far as gaming goes. I did not have a DS when it came out. I had a Game Boy Advance, but it was probably gathering dust somewhere, and so I didn't revisit this game until many years later, and I think someone had to tell me it was in fact different than the Four Swords Adventure, because it, you know, at first glance it looks like that, so I was like, oh, that one? No, I didn't like that one. No, it's different. Okay, I'll try it, but it really didn't click with me, and I've never gone deep in it, so I'm total reversal. I'm suplexing this. I'm 11. I just don't never
brutal.
Sorry.
Suplexed. Gosh.
Sorry, Cappy.
That's all right.
Yeah, I think this was sort of the end of my love affair. Not love affair, just my assumption that, hey, it's a Zelda game, it's got to be great. I enjoyed this one a lot, but going back to it, years later, I just can't get into it. It just feels too chatty, too rigid, too slow. I didn't love the dual world element, the big, small. Like, I feel, Zelda has done that kind of, like, here's parallel realities, here's different perspectives on things a few times. And I feel like that's one that would have worked better in a 3D game where, you can have more of a fluid transition between large and small. I don't know, that effect was really cool in 1990 in Super Mario Brothers 3, but here it just didn't really click for me. So I don't know. I like this one, but I just don't think it really lives up to the series' legacy. It is better than Oracle of Ages, though. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 9? Yes, that's correct. A 9. So, you know, not the worst thing ever, but there are other Zelda games, 8 actually, that I like more. So, that's the Minish Cap. Now on to perhaps the most controversial game on this entire list, The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass for Nintendo DS, the point at which Nintendo said, what if we made a Zelda game for casuals? What if you controlled it entirely with a stylus? Oh, how dare they? So, I don't know, where do we stand on this one? Was it a disaster, or was it kind of cool that Nintendo did that? Or were they just fools compromising the quality of the series just to appeal to the mass market that didn't even care?
Somewhere between the two, I would say. I liked this game. I had fun with this game. There were things about this game that I think a lot of games should incorporate. Without getting into the stylus stuff, I want to say I liked the central idea of a dungeon that you can progressively make it further into. Because there's that whole time limit element on the central dungeon, if memory mm-hmm. serves. But as you play through the game, you're able to make your way further in. The use of the stylus in this game is mixed for me, because while on the one hand, I don't particularly enjoy controlling Link with the stylus, it leads to imprecision. And while the game is designed around it, there are times where I felt like, no, actually, this would have been better with more traditional controls. Worth noting at this point, if you have a Bad Boy DS, you can download a version that lets you control Link with the D-pad that has been made by fans. But definitely don't do it, because that would obviously be against the law. unless you delete it after 24 hours, in which case it's fine. The central stylus use that went not just for moving Link, but also, for example, mapping the flight path of your boomerang and stuff like that. Drawing notes on the map to note where you've got like a wall that you can't blow up yet, for example. Stuff like that. Drawing maps on the touchscreen, as you'll know as a fan of Etrian Odyssey, is the most fun thing ever.
Mm.
I used to draw maps.
It's not done as well here as in Etrian Odyssey, but I'm willing to forgive it that.
I used to draw maps back in the day when I was playing old Speccy games, so that put me right back in the mood for that. And honestly, yeah, I don't think it's top tier Zelda. I think I gave it 7.
Okay. That's actually what I would have guessed based on your commentary.
It's a respectable Zelda game. I think I wouldn't mind playing another touchscreen Zelda game, although they don't really have a system for it now, unfortunately, because they let the amazing dual screen format go by the wayside. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, Your editor is not going to send this review back to you with notes saying score is not consistent with text. So
okay, that's
yes,
good.
You nailed it. Diamond, what about you?
I like this game a lot. I had a lot of fun. This did come out when I had a DS, so I was excited for it when it came out. I tried it and I was like, I was very pleasantly surprised with how well the controls worked. Yes, there were definitely times where I wish I could just push the buttons, but I feel like it worked at least. In my memory, it worked more than it didn't work, and I liked the sailing. I like the guy, I'm sorry I forgot his name, but I like the guy that Link is sort of paired with, who is not really like Link, and like he's always looking, you know, he's looking for money, he's looking for treasure, but he kind of goes along with Link because I think he recognizes that it'll keep him alive for longer, you know, and of course Link doesn't really talk, so this guy gets to talk a lot, and it's just, I found that very amusing. And I remember some of the boss battles being very creative. I remember, you know, you talked about drawing the map. How about the moment where you had to close the DS to, like, push mm-hmm. something, you had to, like, make an impression on something? And boy, was I surprised when that actually worked. I was like, wait. Oh. So, yeah, I gave it a 6. You know, it's not 6. It's not up there with the classics, but at the time, I enjoyed it. And, yeah, positive.
Yeah, for me, this one has actually sort of improved for me over time as I've really come to appreciate the some of the more divisive elements. Like, yeah, I wish there were an option for D-pad controls as opposed to stylus only, or like mixed case. That would be pretty great. But I still think it worked well. But the thing that people complained about the most at the time was the central dungeon, whatever that was called. The one dungeon that you have to go through, and as Stuart said, you have a time limit. But, you know, every time you go back to it, you have new powers, you have new abilities, so you're able to blast through more efficiently. And that kind of, you know, you can create sort of shortcuts and workarounds and things like that. So, I don't know, people made it sound like it was this boring slog that you had to do every time, but you only go for a few minutes at a time. Like, that's by design. You can only spend a few minutes there. Mm. And the test is, like, how far can you make it? You know, how much can you accomplish in the amount of time you're given? And, you know, it really, I think, you know, shortly after this, I really sort of started to appreciate the Mystery Dungeon series. And it has that same sort of core appeal as a roguelike. Like, you're constantly going back to the space and trying again, and you're going to do better every time. And, you know, it's about improvement. It's about efficiency. It's about learning the ropes, learning to use your abilities in clever ways to work through a space that you've been to in a better, smarter way. And it's just really, really well designed, having this as sort of like the central hub of the game that you're constantly going back to defeat, and having to go out into the world to gain the abilities to actually navigate it. I think it's great. I really, really like it.
I think,
and
if I may,
yeah, it's just, it's a very charming game. Go ahead.
I think one of the sticking points is the stealth aspect. I know for me personally, when a game has stealth against invincible enemies, and if you get caught somewhere and you're like, I just can't get through this, I have to be very careful around this thing that kills me in one hit, but I don't want to do that. I want to just run by him, or I'd rather fight him and you know. So I'm definitely, there are games out there, beloved games, that I absolutely despise because they include these sort of dreadful stealth sections. But I think because you don't spend, like you said, you don't spend that much time around them, and usually, you know, once you get more powers, you get to sort of skip certain areas, and eventually I think you do get a sword or something that lets you kill those ghost things anyway. So it's like, and by that point, you've been through the dungeon so many times, like, it feels great. Like, oh, take that, you bastard. You know, I don't need to hide from you anymore. So I think that was a sticking point for a lot of people, because I know other games have done that to me and I've hated it. But yeah, no, for me, it was just right for me when I played it. So I had a good time with it, but I think that was a thing that people cited. They didn't like the stealth stuff.
I'm not saying those people are wrong to dislike it, just that I enjoyed it and thought it was really great. So I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, it's really one of the most imaginative and ambitious attempts to sort of rethink how Zelda could work. And, you know, it's not something that I wanted them to keep doing over and over again, but you know, I'm glad they made the effort and said, how can we reinvent Zelda to work for, you know, a more casual audience, but also have this more sort of central puzzle element to it. And it's, you know, it brings together a lot of things, and, you know, there is the map making and the ability to make notes. That's great. Like, when you're exploring and you're like, oh, I need to remember something, you can just make the note right there in the game. God, that's so good. So good. Anyway, yeah, so that's a 4 for me, which is, you know, the opposite of like when you're saying that's a 10, a 4 is a good game. Well done. Well done, Phantom Hourglass. Cute little cartoon Link. Well done. So we move on to Phantom Hourglass's direct sequel, Spirit Tracks, which does sort of the same thing, but adds a train to the game, and also Zelda, who is a ghost. There's a lot of stuff happening in this game, and it's kind of weird. I'll go ahead and start because I'm always coming in last on these. I'm going to say this one's kind of the opposite of Phantom Hourglass for me. Like, I enjoyed it enough at the time, but in hindsight, I kind of feel like it can't really figure out what it's doing. And the fact that you can't, like, the overworld is really limited to that train thing is so, it just kind of violates the spirit of what I like about Zelda, which is kind of the open sandboxy feel. Yeah, I think the idea was like, let's create a more restrictive guided game to make it more accessible to the mass audience, to better fit the stylus-driven gameplay. And I feel like they just took it too far. I feel like Phantom Hourglass really nailed it, and Spirit Tracks just it misses the mark for me. So I don't love this one. I'm giving it a 10. How about you?
This was I was again, like I said, I liked Phantom Hourglass, so I was pretty excited for this one to come out, but I think this was a really rare case because I remember seeing it for sale in Japan, and it must have tanked at retail because I remember getting it dirt cheap. I remember just finding it, and most Nintendo games, especially here in Japan, have a really long tail. They retain their value. You can't pick them up at some 75% off like you get most games. So, but this one was just in a bargain bin somewhere. I was like, oh, this actually came, I probably misplaced the date. I was like, oh, I can get this on cheap. It's great. And it was not great. I did not have a great time with this. And I think we didn't really talk about it, but, in conjunction with the stylus and the touch controls and Phantom Hourglass, like a lot of early DS games, it was kind of like, oh, you have to do everything. You have to use the mic. You have to do this. You have to close the thing. And Spirit Tracks had, was it an instrument or a whistle? Or I just remember something where you had...
The blowing instrument. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, if I'm going to play this game while I'm out and about, I'm riding on the train, I'm going to work, I'm coming home, I'm not going to sit here and blow on my DS in a crowded train. This is before coronavirus even, but it's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing it. And I found that element very frustrating. Like you said, the train stuff to me was like, it was fun to have Zelda around. That was a fun like twist on the thing to have Ghost Zelda and interact with her. And she, she has that suit of armor thing. Like, there was definitely some ideas that I wanted to enjoy and explore more, but there were also things that I did not want to enjoy or explore more, and I stopped playing. So, yeah, for me, this is a 9. I tried it, and I really did not get very far, and I was not pleased. And, I got off the train.
Oh.
Nice.
So Spirit Tracks is a game about a train you don't want to play on the train. I got it.
No. It's right. And at this point, 2009, I'm living in Japan. I'm riding trains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's my primary game time is trains.
And Stuart, bring it on home.
I'll keep it super brief. This is essentially the same as Phantom Hourglass. Like, where Phantom Hourglass innovates, this game does not at all innovate. I don't hate it, but I forget it exists. And whenever any list of Zelda games come up, it's like, oh yeah, that game, the train game, that existed. I remember that now. There is some fun in the kind of dual, like some of the puzzles where you need to control Phantom and also, Link to sync things up to make progress. You don't use it very often. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because having whole dungeons based around this double character gameplay could get a bit tedious, maybe. So they don't really do that. And I would stress to call this a bad game, but I mean, the train is basically the boat again, but less good, because there's no freedom. It's just you on rails. Literally on rails. Haha, diha. So now I'm going to go ahead and give this an 8, just slightly below Phantom Hourglass. I'd give it a lower, but I don't actually think it's bad. I just think it's fine. It's a perfectly serviceable Zelda game that just happens to be not really, it doesn't really live up to Phantom Hourglass. And it does the same sort of things with the dungeon that you go in repeatedly and etc, etc. It's just a not as good do-over,
Yeah, they really needed to take it in a different direction. They needed to do something unique, but they didn't. They did something that had been unique and no longer was. That's not a very Zelda kind of thing to do, honestly. You don't get that kind of like, here's the thing, same thing as before, but, a little different. Now with a conductor outfit. We'll be right back. So we didn't like that one, but here's a game that people generally said, hey, this is Zelda. This is what I want from Zelda. This is good ass stuff. So how do we feel about The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds for Nintendo 3DS, released in 2013?
Well, I got the special Zelda 3DS with this on it because I was very excited. And I had a very good time playing this game. I think it's too bad that it's ugly. I really do. I do feel strong about this. It is an ugly looking game. I feel
it really
like,
is.
You know, they went for a 3D effect and they went for like a model effect, but it just, I don't know. I just remember being really turned off by the way it looked, but like, oh, well, let's, you know, it's bound to be fun. Let's go for it. And I played it. I really had a good time. I really enjoyed the sort of freeform item collection now where it's like you could basically rent the items, but you could spend extra and keep them. And then basically, you know, that means I would able to, if I hoard enough money, I could just get all the items at once. Like, okay, great. Now I've got all the powers. And I liked how the two world system worked. It was not quite the same as the first game, but it's similar, but you know, they were like, they're twins. And, I also remember having a good time with the, oh my God, it was like an octopus. It was like a giant octopus. Like, I forget what they gave you, but I just remember, I mean, I'm living here in Japan and 3DS was region locked, so I had to play it in Japanese. And I just remember the giant octopus talked with an Osaka dialect, which I thought was very funny. And, you know, the whole wall walking thing I thought was really cute. I remember, you know, definitely had some interesting boss battles where you had to sort of walk on the wall to avoid things. So I really enjoyed this. I probably should revisit it someday. I should break out the 3DS and just try it again. I wish it would, you know, another platform and I wish it looked nicer, but... Mm. I have very fond memories of this game, so I gave it, I'm putting it at 4.
4?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Very high praise. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I agree that it's ugly, but it's very unusual for Nintendo to create a direct sequel to a Zelda game. I mean, you've had, you know, games that are kind of, you know, they say like, hey, here's, you know, the same Link doing stuff, but... This is kind of a rare exception, you know, aside from like Majora's Mask really was kind of the big one. But this really builds on A Link to the Past. And at first I was really turned off by that because I was like, well, this is just the same world. But they do so many different things in that world. I mean, you mentioned the shop system. This is basically Nintendo saying, looking at microtransactions and pay to win and saying, okay, but what if we didn't use real money for that? What if it were a game mechanic? And that's unusual and different, but it was interesting and cool and, you know, really changed up the structure of the game and the flow and kind of made it very, like, progress was kind of discretionary. Like, what do you want to focus on now? What do you want to specialize in? And that was really unusual and enjoyable. It's one of the few games that I feel really put 3D effects to great use. Like there's some depth effects that you really just absolutely need. You know, there's a platforming, moving platform sequence that kind of reminds me of like Landstalker.
But it works
as opposed to Landstalker because of the 3D effect.
Is that the very early game section where you've got the platforms that are like grid, like mesh platforms, so you can always see what's below you and above you? And
I'm thinking of something toward the mid game. You're in a cavern and the platforms are moving around over a basically like a gulf, a chasm. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. The plot twist was maybe not amazing, but it was at least, you know, they're kind of playing with the idea of, shall we say, alternate links. Like, you know, the whole Zelda timeline thing. Like, hey, here's the hero of time. Here's the hero who failed. Here's blah, blah, blah. And this kind of actually builds that into the game, into the story. So there's a lot of fun stuff here. I remember playing this for review while I was in New York City for the PlayStation 4 launch event. And it was great, with great reluctance, that once they gave me my PS4 hardware and sent me back to the hotel room, I had to put away the 3DS and get on with the PlayStation 4 reviews. Because let me tell you, this or Knack, it's not a question.
The Knack waits for no man.
It must have been so difficult for you to choose between the two. I mean, they're both so brilliant.
It was like, do I want to enjoy life or do I want to question my existence.
I stand by Knack being good on hard mode. I had lots of fun with Knack on hard
okay.
mode.
Okay, that's nice.
I got the Knack.
Knack ranking Hootenanny.
I love the song My Sharona by the Knack. That reminded me of that.
How is it that both Knack games rank at the bottom? How weird. So, yeah, I'm giving this a, let's see, a 5. Finally, Stuart, since this came out, you know, at the same time as Knack, I assume, you know, that colored it poorly in your
eyes. It did, but, cast aside in favor of Knack.
Yeah.
But
do go on.
This is my number 2. I absolutely love this game.
Whoa.
Which is almost weird because of my, I don't know, my feelings towards Link to the Past, which I feel bad about because I know it's this amazing game. But it was this game that really captured me. I don't really care about the reuse of the Link to the Past map for the reasons sort of stated, but this game almost felt like Nintendo thumbing their nose at critics of the Zelda series. They were like, right, okay, you think this is formulaic? Right, go wherever you want. Take whatever items you want, you know? We'll show you. We can design a completely tight gameplay experience that lets you take the dungeons on in more or less any order that you want. Like, what an achievement to have a game that lets you do that. And that's without even letting you walk into the freaking walls, you know? When I first walked into the wall and I looked and I realized what the implication was for the level design, that was one of my big, in all time, of all of my gaming history, that was one of my biggest moments, realizing there and then, oh my god, I've just realized that what this merging into the walls thing can do for the dungeon design. I think I almost got emotional at how impressed I was by it. That was incredible to me. That was a top 10 defining moment in gaming. That was like when what people used to say when they saw Mario 64 for the first time. That's how I felt when I saw that gimmick. And when I saw how it played out in the actual game, when I actually played the game, I thought it lived up to that promise. I thought they kept coming up with genius puzzles to account for this new ability that you've got, plus all the possible abilities that you can rent and bring with you. They have to work with those restrictions and or lack of restrictions depending on what you've taken. I liked the risk reward of the fact that when you die, you lose all those items. They all go back to what's his face for you to have to rent again, and sometimes you'll have to scrounge up the rupees to do so. I remember finding this game surprisingly hard as well. Like, they really went for it with the difficulty. Like, the combat was a bit more difficult. The bosses were a bit more difficult than usual. And there's also hero mode as well for the real masochists out there who want to die in one hit in a Zelda game. But again, that's Nintendo saying, oh yeah, too easy. Well, here's your hard mode. And I think hero mode has actually persisted through the series since then as well. I'm fairly sure it turned up in the other games. So yeah. It's a 2 for me. I think this is them absolutely on the top of their game. And even though it is a sort of rehash of a previous game, that almost adds to it, the fact that they made a game that, to me, is superior to Link to the Past. I enjoyed it way more than Link to the Past. And you're not wrong for loving Link to the Past. I'm wrong. I'm the one who's wrong. But we all have to live with the consequences of that now.
Then, so very, very well received game, and finally, Nintendo's immediate follow-up to Link Between Worlds. That kind of came fairly early in the 3DS's life, as the system had really picked up speed and hit its stride. And here was a game that came at the end of the 3DS's life, and they really shouldn't have bothered with Triforce Heroes. And if you've been paying attention to the numbers we've been putting out here, there are zero surprises here, because none of us have given anything a 12 yet. So guess what, folks? This is 3 12s. This is the worst that it gets, and I fully support that opinion, because this game is shockingly terrible for a Zelda game. I went into it with open arms and eyes and an open heart and an open mind. I was totally open. I was just making myself vulnerable here. I was like, okay, you know, the four swords thing was good. Let's pare it down to three. It's going to be good times. Played it to review it and hated the hell out of it. I just did not have fun with this at all. The connectivity was bad. I remember being at an event with Bob, and we were trying to work on this to review it. And in the same room, we could not get our 3DSs to connect long enough for us to actually complete a mission. And jeez. I don't think that was a hardware thing, because I used, you know, we both used our 3DSs online quite a bit. But everything is just built around that. And it, the, I don't know, there's some interesting stuff you can do, like the weird powers you give Link, like cheerleader. That's unusual. That's different. I appreciate the fact that they were trying to do something different, but I don't think they did something different well. And that's kind of the other side of that equation. Like, hey, let's mix things up, but also let's mix things up effectively. And, you know, A Link Between Worlds did that. A Link Between Worlds took what seemed to be, you know, just a rehash of A Link to the Past and just totally shook everything up and gave you a Zelda experience that was completely really unique in the series history. And this is also unique, but bad. Anyway, that's my that's my rant.
If you don't mind me going, it's not a tangent, but Nintendo around this era of the 3DS, which was not that far off the Switch being out, or the Switch may already have been out, I'm not sure.
I don't think it was quite out yet, but...
Well, I mean, this was the era of the 3DS where, for me, while there was good stuff coming out for it, Nintendo were being a bit weird. They were going into a bit of a weird Nintendo phase and putting out things like Hey Pikmin and Mario and Luigi Dream Team and Paper Jam and these, like, Kirby Battle Royale and these games that just felt like they were like, okay, here's a new one, here's a new Zelda, here's a new Kirby, whatever, who cares? I mean, Triforce Heroes, like, I don't think anyone wanted a game like this. Oh, yeah, I forgot Metroid Prime Federation Force as well.
Yep, there's Federation Force.
All these games that they were bringing out that were, like, just almost felt like they were just filling space, you know? Between the big releases, they were like, we're done with the 3DS. We've got this new thing coming.
Well, no, the problem was Wii U had just farted at retail and no one wanted it.
So Wii U even existed.
Yeah, exactly.
Course.
See, that's the thing. They were kind of scrambling, so they were putting together these kind of stopgap measures. And this really feels like this was, I had the wrong number in my notes. It's 2015, not 2017. But even so, like, this was still kind of late in the game or the 3DS's life. And yeah, it was very much the getting into that Nintendo, like, oh crap, Wii U is not doing what we need to do. We've got to keep these brands going until Switch comes out. And, you know, Switch would wash away all those bad memories, but 3DS, it's modest success, but a great success compared to Wii U meant that it ended up being kind of the platform for things that probably should have maybe not been made, or at least been given longer for development.
There are a lot of games towards this era of the 3DS that are just like Kirby's Epic, Extra Epic Yarn, or the port of Luigi's Mansion 1, or the port of Captain Toad, or all these games that I constantly forget exist that are essentially WarioWare Gold, Rhythm Heaven Remix. They're just rehashes.
Yeah, Mario Maker 3DS, where you don't really make stuff so much as play challenges.
My God. Jeremy, I brought Mario Maker 3DS and I was like, this is going to be the best thing effing ever. Like, I can't wait to play this. I can't wait to draw the levels with my stylus and then share the levels online on this huge network of online levels that I'll be able to play the rest of my life. Where the hell's the button to share my level online? I was furious with that one. But, yeah, nobody wanted this, and it belongs in the toilet. Goodbye.
Yeah, this is definitely emblematic of an era of Nintendo history that, thankfully, they managed to survive and have come out the other side looking much better for.
And let me stress, I love my 3DS, and I kiss it all the time, but
these
games... I mean, even the rehashes, like Rhythm Heaven Remix that I've just said are rehashes, they were fun. They weren't bad. They were just stuff we played before, that's all.
All right, anyway, so we've lamented the 3DS's late life enough. let's wrap this up. Diamond, weigh in with your final thoughts on what was that called? Triforce Heroes.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing I can add to what you're saying is that when you put this on the list, I honestly forgot what the hell this was. I had to look it up. I was like, what? are you sure this isn't Four Swords again? No, it's a different game? Okay.
No, there's only three this time.
Yeah, no, I had to look it up, and I was like, oh, that thing. And then, yeah, I... No, I mean, if I didn't like Four Swords, I'm not going to do this. You know, sorry.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a mistake.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm really sorry. I think that one thing that makes this stand out, as similar to what Diamond mentioned about Spirit Tracks, I mean, Triforce Heroes, Zelda games don't go down in price. Breath of the Wild is still £50 here, if not more. They retain their value. I just bought Triforce Heroes for £11 new. That game doesn't... Nobody wants it. I mean, I do, because I bought it, clearly. But... it's a Zelda game that you can buy from the bargain bucket. That should never be happening.
Stu, I'm curious. I have no frame of reference. How many chippies is 11 pounds? How many meals is that?
That like would be, God, given inflation, though, because fish costs so much now. I think chippy tea, that would be 150, maybe like 190, 11. Just 8 and a bit chippy teas, I think.
Hmm.
Depends
so
if
worth
you get
it?
A pie.
Not worth it.
Depends if you get
not,
a pie.
Not worth 1.5 chippy teas.
I would rather have one chippy tea than play Triforce Heroes again, honestly.
All right. Well, there you go. Less fun than a bite of fish.
What is the what is the Japanese equivalent to the chippy tea?
I'm in the dark here. I've never been to the UK, so I can't compare and contrast meals I have not eaten. I want to try it. It sounds I've heard good things about the chips.
Well,
so
okay,
I try
let me set the scenario here. You're in somewhere in Japan. I don't know whereabouts. Let's say
yes.
Tokyo. Yes, okay. You're slightly drunk, maybe a tiny bit drunk. Okay.
Yes.
Just imagine, it's 11 p.m. or maybe later. All your friends have now gone home. You're hungry. What are you going to go and buy and eat? That's my question.
Yeah, I'm saying this is probably equivalent to a curry.
Right.
Katsu curry or something.
Could be. So that's very big. I would say for me, if it's winter, I might go and get some oden. Some convenience store oden, which is you know, not a universal choice, but it's certainly popular with older people like myself. And if it's maybe a little different season, I might go for like a meat bun, also available at convenience store. Definitely for me, I would go to convenience store, probably not like an actual restaurant, but
Oh damn. I just looked up oden and it looks amazing.
I'm a big oden fan.
Oh my
yes.
God. Wow, can we rank Japanese snacks instead?
Weird things floating at the front of a convenience store in Japan. Yeah, absolutely. But in some other episode.
I want to go to Japan so much.
That is the ranking hootenanny. We have talked through all the 2D Zelda games worth talking about, and we've come up with numbers for them. And so, I mean, we kind of made it pretty clear from the beginning which one was going to get the top marks. So rather than counting down the rankings, I'm going to count up the rankings, and we'll start with number one. By far the runaway favorite here, and this, remember, it's word of law. This is official. This is God's truth.
Oh, yeah.
This is how everyone has to think about these games from now on. I'm sorry, but we've made a podcast about it, and that's just the way it works. The number one Zelda game is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening for Game Boy.
Yes,
right.
Deserved.
And its myriad remakes. They're also, you can include those too.
No,
this is not a dream.
With 4 points, only four points.
Believe me, this is not a dream.
I ruined the perfect score. By giving it a 2 as opposed to a 1. But yes,
that's okay,
4 points,
Jeremy.
Link's Awakening.
In time, we can forgive you.
Surprisingly, number 2 turned out to be The Legend of Zelda, the original NES game, with 9 points. Even more surprisingly, the third best game is not A Link to the Past, but rather A Link to the Past's sequel, A Link Between Worlds, with 11 points.
Hell yeah.
A Link to the Past, the supposed best 2D game ever made in the Zelda series. That's number 4 with 11 points. Or with 14 points. After that comes in, surprisingly, the dark horse, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, with 15 points, followed by another dark horse, The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass, with 17 points. Beyond that, we're moving into the long, sad stretch toward the end. Oracle of Seasons coming in, what was that, number 7? The back half, yes, with 20 points, followed by the Minish Cap with 23. Several steps down from that, we have Spirit Tracks with 27, followed by, pretty closely, a tie between the Four Swords Adventure, and Oracle of Ages, both of which got 29 points, followed by the one perfect score, The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, with perfect 12s. That's you know, double sixes on the dice. Surely that's a winner. You can take that to Vegas. So Link's Awakening, The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, A Link to the Past, The Adventure of Link, Phantom Hourglass, Oracle of Seasons, The Minish Cap, Spirit Tracks, Four Swords, Oracle of Ages, and finally, The Forgettable Triforce Heroes. So, we will not be accepting questions at this time. Please write to your congressman and ask them to enshrine this, codify it into law. And that's good. Yeah, maybe someday we'll talk about the 3D Zelda games. But could any of them ever hope to match up to the ranking of Link's Awakening? Highly doubt it. But anyway, that's it. So thank you both for your time. Fight and Chip.
Thank you.
This is a patron-supported episode, patron-exclusive episode, so we don't have to tell people how they can listen to Retronauts, because clearly they know already, because they are here listening. My God. Thank you for supporting the show.
These are the Wise fans, yes.
The Wise... You mean East? The East fans?
I used to call it Wise. I didn't know better.
Well, I mean, in a lot of versions in the U.S. and Europe... they spell it Y apostrophe S. So yes, obviously that's Wise, but no.
It's not very wise of me.
Yes, the wise people who support Retronauts with their patronage, thank you for making the show possible, for allowing us to fill your life with objectively correct rankings of video game series. Okay, so Stuart, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Chupacabra. You can read my gaming journalism on websites such as Push Square, Nintendo Life, in magazines such as Retro Gamer, Sega Powered, and Ninety Fresh, which I didn't name, so don't blame me for that one. they're not going to like it if they hear me say that.
That's the same mindset that gave us Shiggy as a nickname.
Yeah, Shigzy. No, Shigzy we used to call
it. Oh, God, yes.
It's ridiculous.
Some people need to be sent to jail.
And also, you can read my comic, Mary Hell, at maryhellcomic.com.
All right. Diamond.
Yes, it's Diamond Fight, F-E-I-T. That's my last name. So you can find me on the internet as Fight Club, F-E-I-T-C-L-U-B. I use Twitter a lot. I use Twitch sometimes. I need to get back into that. And I'm working on... well, a few projects right now, and hopefully we'll have something formal to announce sooner or later. But, yeah.
And finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, on the internet. On Twitter is GameSpite, at LimitedRunGames.com. Actually, you won't really find me at the website, but I'm doing stuff at Limited Run Games. You can find me, obviously, doing stuff at Retronauts, and on my YouTube channel, where I have talked about some of these Zelda games, and actually... by the end of the year, I'll be doing a full retrospective on Zelda 2. So look forward to that.
Ooh, oh, hell yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a long one. I just put together a 23-minute video on Blaster Master, which came on the heels of a 27-minute video about Super Mario 2.
Sweet.
Someone please help me. My family is dying. How do I budget my time? Anyway, so that's the stuff that we do. Thank you once again for supporting us. Please look forward to more exciting episodes on Monday. I believe, according to the schedule, Stuart will be leading an episode on... can I spoil it?
Yeah, do it.
All right, Shredder's Revenge.
Hell yeah.
Very exciting. I hear that game is good, but I haven't played it yet.
I got a discussion in there, and also I got an interview with the lead designer, and that's going to be tagged onto that episode. And you're going to listen to it, and you're going to go, wow, at the revelations.
That's exciting. People do love their revelations. Anyway, you've learned a lot. You've had many revelations about Zelda, such as which games are the best. So thank you for listening, and I hope that you feel enlightened now, those of you who have listened. So that's it for this episode, but if you press start, you can play the second quest.
Good night!
Good night.